and ain't no wannabes here with some not so nice advice for your writing career. To be clear, no punches will be pulled, but the punch may be spiked. How they like before they get on the mic. To my left, we got the mighty Mer Lafferty, and if I piss her off, believe me, she'll come after me. And her co-host, Matt Evan Wallace, on the right. Yes, she may be half as hype as she can take him in a fight. So settle in, folks, buckle in and boot up. Time to meddle in a way to make your writer shut up. It's hard work, but the perk is that it's fun and exciting. Facebook will still be there when you're done writing. Ditch Diggers! Ditch Diggers!
Coming to you from the snack tent outside the construction site of the new Ditch Diggers Manor House. It is, well, the Ditch Diggers with Mer Lafferty and Matt Wallace hanging out in the snack tent. I just like saying snack tent a lot.
I noticed that. I noticed you were working in. As you were doing the second one, I was like, oh, she's enjoying saying snack tent. And why would you? No. Everybody loves snacks. It's a fun word to say.
It is. It's the, and you know, I figured the construction workers had to have a place to go have a break. And I don't know if they call it the snack tent, but I do. And so everyone should from now on.
Yes, you were very concerned that this, we were like misnaming? Is that a thing?
That's where, yeah.
Yeah. You were very concerned about our imaginary construction workers and what they would think about you labeling it the snack tent. And we had a whole discussion about it before we started.
Very, very concerned is a little bit of an exaggeration, but...
You had concerns. You weren't, you know, it wasn't on the scale of, like, you know, pandemic.
Will we get letters?
Yeah. From, we're going to get letters from all the construction workers that listen to our show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there'd be plenty of construction. Everybody wants to be a writer, so I'm sure there are plenty of construction workers out there who yearn to be professional writers who listen to our show religiously.
So yep.
If you're out there, you can correct us on what the snack tent is called. Maybe it's
Or you can tell us that you're going to be taking the term snack tent to work tomorrow and see how that flies.
Yeah, that's what a true fan would do. That's what a district
fan
would do. They would go and they would make it a thing on our behalf. So none of this has anything to do with anything at all.
Yeah,
but we're going through some times right now, and we're doing what we can.
Yeah, I'm we've been not doing stuff, and I haven't done it. I should be writing in a while because I've got a family member in the hospital, and that's taken up most of my time. And I apologize for everything I'm behind on, to you and to all the listeners. But
you don't owe anyone an apology, Mark.
I owe people an explanation.
Explanations are fine. I don't think you owe it. It's a nice thing to offer, but you don't owe anyone anything. And like you should, like you said, it's taking precedence, and it should take precedence. Living people and their health take precedence over all the things that are not alive. And,
yes.
You know, I think it's okay to go from there down the list. So we all understand, and we'll all cope. Somehow we'll find the strength, or we'll find our own snack tent, Mer.
Be the snack tent you want to find to experience in the world. You want to see in the world.
Words. Mer is the word.
I'm much better with words when writing. That's why I'm a podcaster.
That is. We save it. You have to save a little bit of it for the for the bread and butter. But no, Mer, it's so I'm sorry that all of that is happening, but I know that you will come through it stronger. Better, faster. Maybe not faster. That doesn't really have anything to do with anything. But, you know, you could work on that as well. You could do some wind sprints.
Wind sprints?
It's good to be fast.
True.
I saw a trailer for The Quiet Place Part 2, and, like, if that happens, you're going to need to be fast. Things move, Mer.
But it's not Quiet Place Part 2 Electric Boogaloo? Because that would be really cool if they could mix the breakdancing with The Quiet Place.
Yeah, but the whole
thing. That's a crossover that needs to happen. That's the challenge.
Is to quietly break dance?
Yes.
That would be the ultimate, like, competition. It's like you have to, that's the expert, you know, almost suicide level of break dancing is you have to do it without making a sound. It's like ninja break dancing. It's like a test that they would give you in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Especially like the sequels as they got worse. But yeah, so that's what they should have done. That's what John Krasinski and Emily Blunt should have done. But they didn't, because they're neither as smart nor as talented as we are. That's right. I just called them out, Mark. I called them all the way out.
Just, you know, they're going to be listening to this and going, oh, that was a good burn. Darn.
That one needs some Tiger Bomb for that burn. You don't put Tiger Bomb in.
No, you don't. That would be awful.
That would be terrible. It'd make it worse. Make it so much worse. Mm-hmm. I couldn't think of the thing that you put on burn, so I said Tiger Bomb.
Well, you could just, that could just be a masochistic response to a burn. Oh, man, I'm going to make that worse right now.
I don't want to advocate anyone doing anything to harm themselves, but I'm also not here to judge anyone's preferences. It's a fine line that you have to walk, Murray, you know. But yeah, so, but it's easy to remember Tiger Bomb. It's a really catchy name. Like, whoever came up with that, can marketing genius. Because you never forget Tiger Bomb once you hear it.
No, or once you experience it.
I'm being totally unironic right now. Like, that's me a too. Great name for a thing. I appreciate really simple, strong concepts like that the older I get, and the more I try to market things and fail at it. So whoever came with the Tiger Bomb, you're doing good. You do have to win. You should feel proud of yourself.
They're listening too. They live next door to John Krasinski.
And Emily Blunt,
Because
they're married.
Yeah. I don't know. They're in Hollywood. They might have like three or four houses between them and just bop around.
It's true. And, you know, if you can, why not? You know, spread it around. Anyway, as previously stated, none of this has anything to do with anything, and yet we're still talking about it.
That's true, but because it's fun to talk about.
It is. But you know what's relevant, Murr? You know what's
relevant? What's relevant, Matt?
Questions, Murr. Questions and answers. Because we are doing one of our signature, trademark, notorious, nay, world-famous Ditch Diggers Q&A feedback episodes. That's what this is.
That's what this is, yeah. You make it sound so much more impressive than we've really let our feedback sit for too long and we need to take care of it.
I was trying to channel the energy of the Tiger Bomb inventor. And be like, I'm
channel the Tiger Bomb energy, yes.
And channel the Tiger Bomb energy and like put it into everything you do. So I'm like, this can just be an episode of us catching up on feedback because we're horribly unprofessional and we let it sit forever. Or it can be one of our amazing signature, much anticipated Ditch Diggers feedback episodes. And
that's
I chose
right.
the latter.
That's right. And you know what? When you listen to this episode, you're not going to want to touch your eyes, but I bet you'll feel a lot better once you're done.
Yeah.
Just like Tiger Bomb.
Exactly. No, I got what you were going for there. I felt you made the point, and I didn't need to color it or elaborate on it at all.
Okay.
I just wanted to stand up. So.
All right.
That's what that was. But yeah, we have some emails, Mer. Don't we? Do we not?
We do have emails.
We want to get to, because our listeners are important to us. You're all important to us. Not individually, because we don't really know you individually, but as a concept, as a whole, you are important to us in an appropriate, healthy context that takes up the right amount of our mental energy.
A Tiger Bomb amount.
A Tiger Bomb amount of our energy.
I don't know what that means. I'm just going to go to the first question.
Yeah, just do it. Go for it.
With permission to use her name, Katie says, I'm getting ready to pitch agents for the first time. I want to have a career as a writer and publish many books, but I'm currently working a full-time job that I will probably not be able to leave for a very long time. It took me a little over a year to write 100,000 words of my first draft of this novel, and I'm guessing another 6 months to a year to edit. My concern is that since I won't be able to commit another 40 hours a week to writing, I won't seem like a good marketable option for agents. I really want to do traditional publishing, partially because I would not have the time to manage a self-published effort. When should I bring this up to agents if they're considering representing me? You are not rare. That's the first thing you need to realize.
No, if anything, that's like the blueprint.
Yeah.
Or if you were just going to create the prototypical author, that would be the blueprint for them.
So yeah, like Matt said, that's pretty much what everybody is. I mean, some authors never quit their day jobs. Some quit their day jobs too early. Like, I've broken it down on my blog before. If we can remember to link it, I can. But, you know, the magical happy six-figure deal is not as exciting as it sounds, because the money doesn't come to you all at once. And nobody takes taxes out, so you got to put that aside. And your agent takes their cut. So, like, a $100,000 deal just got knocked down to, like, $50,000 after taxes and agent cut. And then that's not going to be given to you all in one hunk. It's going to be given to you probably over 3 or 4 years. So it sounds super exciting and lucrative, but it's not in the short term. And so even if you got a six-figure deal, it would be a very bad idea to quit your day job. So a lot of people have day jobs. I don't have one, but I have several freelance avenues of income that are not my specific writing job. And Matt works full-time, right?
Yeah, I have a full-time job that is also writing. I write video games full-time in addition to writing novels. So I write for a living. That was the goal that I pared down to. It was like, I just want to write for a living. And I do that, and I'm very proud of that. But I also, part of that is I have a full-time writing job on top of writing the 5 books I currently have under contract, you know. So it's a hustle, man, and everybody's doing it. The other thing I would submit humbly is that Katie is overthinking things a little bit or a lot at this stage. It's good to think in terms of a career. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Katie, you're also at the stage of, like, don't think of the whole career. Just think of the step that you're taking, which is, you are trying to sell a book. That's what you're trying to do right now. It's like you're trying to get an agent interested in an actual... There was a book, right? I'm not misremembering the question.
Yes, there is a book.
She said she has like a 100,000-word book. So we're starting with that.
Yeah, right? But yes. Okay.
So I'm just saying, like, you don't need to submit an entire career plan to potential agents with the book. Just send them the book.
However, she does have a follow-up question that is similar to what you're talking to. I heard, thanks to Murr and the past agent stories, that you should have a thorough discussion of where you want to go in your publishing career before taking on a new agent. Things like markets, original IP versus work for hire gigs, etc. What kind of career goals should I bring up with an agent that's considering representing me? Like Matt said, you do need to sell the book. On the other hand, I mean, I think the first thing to talk about would be and figure out a diplomatic way to ask this, but it's like, I had an agent drop me after she couldn't sell one book. She fired me. And it's like, okay. And then I got my current agent, Jen, and she has stuck with me through a number of books that didn't sell. Maybe not all at once, but... You know, she got me, you know, we had a book that didn't work out. We worked together on another pitch. We sold that. But then we worked together on another pitch and that didn't sell. I mean, so it's like she's invested in my career. And I think that's the main thing you want to know from an agent is if they are in it with, if they're interested in you for the long haul instead of just the book.
Yeah, that's, I mean, all these are, my main point is, like, don't worry that because, like, you're going to have to tell an agent, I'm not sure I have enough time to write a book every 6 months or a year, that, like, you're not marketable and you can't be represented, you're not going to have a career. That's just kind of ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, like, and there's also the fact of, I mean, there are plenty of people whose writing careers, who are writing full-time, who are behind on books. No.
Yeah, we're all behind on everything all the time. It's not something that should inhibit you, and that shouldn't be your focus. Your time is what it is, so you're going to work within that framework, and that's just the way it's going to be. And if you do bump up against an agent who's like, well, if you can't turn in a book, you know, at this regular interval, I can't represent you, then you don't want them to be your agent, so it doesn't make any fucking difference, you know?
Yeah.
But I just would submit, like, right now, and again, I started off by saying, you should think in terms of career, that's good. but you don't have to solve every problem at once. Like, start with, you wrote a book, make sure the book is as good as it can be, and make sure the pitch for the book is as good as it can be. Get interested, get agents interested in that book, and then you can move from there. Don't start with, I don't have enough time to produce as much material as I think I'm going to need to have a long career and write many, many books. Like, cart before the horse kind of thing.
Yeah.
The book is the horse.
The book is the horse. And this podcast is Tiger Balm.
It is, damn it.
Philip writes, I teach college English, and one course I'm developing in my department is a fantasy literature course. Picking the books for the syllabus made me wonder, do you all care if your books are taught or studied, or is that just so vanishingly small a percentage of potential sales that it doesn't matter? I'd love my stuff to be studied. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, I don't think of that in terms of, like, marketing and expanding my reach. It'd be a nice thing to have happen. You know, I don't correlate it with, like, having my books in libraries, which I actively want to happen and think does help immensely. But it'd be a cool thing. It's not, you know, it's not, like, in the top 10 things I worry about my book being involved with.
But also, it also implies that your book has enough of a literary merit to maybe think that it's going to last, and you might reach some new readers that never would have picked up your book anyway.
But the thing is, like, at that point, it's more of a benchmark than anything. Like, you have to get to a certain point of recognition to have that happen. So it's more like a goal than a tool. If you can see what I'm saying, it's like. It's not something that you work into a marketing plan or like a target thing. You're not going after professors to try to get them to teach your new book in schools. That's just not how that whole thing works. So it's a cool thing to have happen, and it's not a bad thing to have happen. It'd be a useful thing to have happen, but it's something that's going to happen after a lot of other stuff has happened.
I see.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's just my I don't feel like they teach a lot of new books coming out in, you know, in syllabuses and college courses.
Yeah. And, you know, I will ask Philip that you pick books that have been, that are more recent than 1960, and books by women and people of color and LGBT represented people, and just remind your students that more people other than Heinlein and Asimov write books.
Yeah, fuck the canon, really. That's where I've gotten to. I don't have any grace or fancy language for it anymore. I'm just like, fuck the canon. Let's move on. It's time.
I remember reading The Martian Chronicles when I was in grade school and thinking, this is crap. I even like science fiction, and I'm like, this is not good. I did not get the whole classic thing behind it. Sorry.
And it's just not. It's not even just the content. It's like even the styles are outmoded. Like, it just doesn't. You can feel that it was people writing before people had really figured out the whole writing thing. If that even makes sense.
Sure.
The modern content.
You mean like how to craft a plot?
Yeah, and it's not like we have to burn all those books and never talk about them again. But like, it has to be balanced with all the decades that have happened since. It's just ridiculous to focus solely on those. But like, it's such a ridiculous way of approaching any kind of literature at all. So I wholeheartedly agree. Let's get newer books in there by people who aren't dead old white men. But yeah, it'd be a cool thing to have. But yeah, to go back to your question, yeah, sure. It'd be a cool thing to have your books taught in school. It'd feel good. And, you know, maybe you get some speaking gig money out of it.
Oh, speaking gig money. I like that. Universities have money. I know this because I'm about to give a university a lot of money.
You are. So much money. You should have had a dumber child.
Look, I tried, man. I smoked. I drank. I did all the things you're not supposed to do just to make sure I would have a child that I could afford. But no, she still came out very smart.
Yeah. I watched you blow bong hits right in your face as a toddler. Nothing's stronger. That didn't happen, but it's
no,
funny.
It did not. Did not. So here's a good question.
Good question.
Well, no, they were all good. I'm just saying this one... Shut up, Matt. Jessica writes, I thought Matt's rant at the end of a recent episode about publishers requiring authors to do all the marketing work was really important. It brings up the question of... that I've been struggling with. As publishers squeeze authors more and more, is it worth it to work with them at all? This, and you know, it's the classic, it's should you self-pub or should you go traditional? Self-pub has its drawbacks. I get it. There's the upfront cost, miss out on the monetary boost of advance. And my understanding is that traditional publishers still have a way easier time getting into bookstores, but still, no, they have the only way of getting into bookstores. No. I mean, it is like nigh impossible unless you're a local author and the local bookstore is very, very friendly. It's nigh impossible to get your book into bookstores, and that's huge.
Yeah, that's the difference between, you know, showing a movie in tents on your own in small towns and being in all the multiplexes. You know, it's just... The thing is, this conversation is always valid, and it only gets more valid as the ways to publish your own work become more accessible and easier and more widespread.
Yeah.
For me, it's worth it to work with big publishers because they give you a lot of legs up in a lot of ways. You get upfront money to live. You get access to distribution. You get access to a lot of things that you're not going to get access to when you self-publish. Self-publish, it's very, very difficult. The one thing I always like to stress is people have to understand it's very, very difficult to self-publish a book. You can put a book out there, but like to self-publish a book and have it sell really well. It's a very difficult thing to do, especially for a new author with no established audience.
Yeah.
Very, very hard. And I feel like these conversations, it just people have this perception that it's a lot easier than it is. They equate the ability.
It's easy to do it very poorly.
Yeah. It's easy to do it extremely poorly, but they equate the ability to put the book out with the ability to sell the book, and those are two entirely different things.
Yeah.
It's never been easier to put a very good book out yourself and have people be able to access it. The access is there. The awareness is something you have to create from scratch, and that is still an incredibly difficult thing to do. So,
but it's not only that.
Right.
It's the fact that we complain. And our complaints are valid. However, there are a reason why so many people work at publishers. It's not even just the person hours that go into putting a book together. There's like years and years and years of experience in graphic design, cover design, meeting with sales reps, what marketing they do. And editing. It's like, I don't know if I'll ever self-pub again, because Six Wakes was what it was because of my editor, Davey. You know, she worked with me tirelessly through several edits of that book. And I'll be 100% honest with you. I usually only tell this story in person where I'm not recorded. But I will be honest with you. For a variety of reasons, I did not like the title Six Wakes. I did not like my cover. But it wasn't my decision. It was marketing's decision. And even though I didn't like it, everybody who bought it said they loved it. They said the title caught their eye and the cover caught their eye. And that's what they're supposed to do. And so many authors think, I want the cover to accurately represent my book. Marketers don't give a shit about that. And that really pisses people off because they want a piece of art that accurately represents their book. But the marketers are thinking, what can I do to sell this thing? And if you're designing or even hiring someone to do your book cover, they're going to want guidance from you. And I will tell you, I know myself well enough that I don't know dick about guiding a cover designer on how to cover my book. I would not know where to tell them to start. I don't know shit about fonts. All I know is the right font is important. And I know when the wrong font is chosen. It's like the opposite of I don't know. It's art. I'll know it when I see it. It's like I know bad fonts when I see them, but I can't like point to a good font and say that is the font for my book. It's like these little bitty things that people go to school for and go through, you know, hundreds and thousands of work hours learning their craft. They're not just easily replaced by a cover design tool. And so either you have to be extremely hands-on and find someone who will read your book and come up with a good cover design, or decide you know enough about cover design to do it. Or you could be like Ursula Vernon and good at damn near everything she touches, and so she can design her own damn covers. Not that I'm bitter. I love Ursula very much. But it's like, I one thing I worry about self-publishing doing is devaluing the jobs that these people do, because there are now tools that do it. Like, I need a good editor to go in and tell me, you know, you've been extremely repetitive about this one thing, and I know you didn't even notice, so why don't you figure out what that means and maybe change some of that? That happened to one of my books. I had brought up a certain theme several times, but it wasn't, like, important to the book. It's just something I did over and over again, and my editor's like, why did you do this? I'm like, I had no idea I even did it. So I want editing. I want professional cover design. Even if I don't like the cover, I'm going to trust them to know what they're doing. And same with the graphic design, which is different. You know, the cover design is the art. The graphic design is where the text goes, where your name goes, what font, etc. So there's an awful lot that still goes into traditional publishing that self-publishing can't touch yet, unless you're willing to spend an awful lot of time and money being hands-on to make sure your book gets the right treatment in all the aspects.
No, you're absolutely right about all of that. That's all dead on. And I didn't mean to gloss over that. The two parts are creating a professional good book and then selling that book. And the rant that didn't reference that question was about selling the book, but that sure. Other part is extremely important, and another big part of why I also go with traditional publishing, because I don't want to do any of that shit either. And you need to do that stuff if you create a really good book. So no, that's all dead on. That's absolutely all dead on.
Yeah, it's nice when Amazon sends me a couple $100 a month for my self-published titles, but it's also nice when my publisher sends me a couple $1,000 or more every 4 or 6 months when their check comes in. And that's like still technically more than I'm making for self-pub. So regularity of pay.
And your mileage may vary. That's true.
True, of course.
I just want to underscore again how difficult. I know plenty of people who have and do self-published books and sell very well.
Oh, yeah.
And it's entirely possible to do it if you're willing to commit the time and energy to do it. But it's just not an automatic win. And it gets talked about. There are just so many people who like radically go one way or the other. And radical self-pub people they always make it sound a lot easier than it is. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's hard to sell any book, you know, like it's hard to sell a book with a traditional publisher. With all of those resources that come with a traditional publisher, it's still very hard to get the awareness and the market saturation and the conversion rate to make a book successful. And then when you do self-pub, you have to do everything that you have to do with a traditional publisher without the enormous resources that you have access to with a traditional publisher. So it's 10 times harder. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
There are plenty of benefits to doing it if you're somebody who wants all the control and you feel like you've got the stuff to do it, go for it. But
yeah,
you're giving up a lot, and there is a lot of value in tradition. As much shit as I talk about it, as frustrated as I am with a lot of it right now, for the kind of, like Mer was saying, for the kind of writer I am and the schedule that I have right now, I do not have the time, even if I wanted to do all the shit, to put out a book myself that would be up to the standards I want it to be. I flat out do not have the time to do that.
We complain about it, but we're still doing it when we know there are other options. Yeah. And this is one of the reasons why. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to explain that's why. It's like I don't have the time, the energy, or the skills to commit to doing it all myself right now, and that's one of the main reasons I go. I want all the things that the traditional publisher provides. And within that, I still have all the complaints that I have about it, and I don't think I'm wrong about a lot of that stuff, but you just need to know what you're getting into either way. A traditional publisher is not going to solve all your problems. They're not going to do everything for you.
No.
There's going to be
and you might not like what they do for you.
And you might not like what they do for you. But self-publishing has a million other challenges and a bunch of other stuff that you're not going to like, too. So just you need to be aware of the strengths and weaknesses of both and what each take. And make your decision based on the kind of person you are and what you want to get out of it and what you want to put into it, you know?
Yeah. And that's it for email questions.
Cool.
Has Twitter hooked us up?
Yeah. We've got a question from Pendoland. Pendoland. If someone were to indie pub something under a pen name, would they be giving up their debut author, quote, status, if they were to ever be traditionally published under a real name, also in quotes? Or would they still be considered a debut author by industry pros? #ditchdiggers. #ditchdiggers. Doubled up on the hashtag, and I respect that.
Just to make sure.
Pendoland, not fucking around.
I think there are two different definitions of debut author here. One is a marketing term, and one is, say, the term intended for the Astounding Award, formerly the John W. Campbell Award for Best New Writer.
Right.
Which that is a specific definition of at what point do you, the author, you, not the name, make your first pro sale. That is when you're a debut author. Doesn't matter what name it's under. Otherwise, no, I think if you've got a pen name, you have and you publish again, it's under another name. That's that name's debut book. Some people don't hide their pen name. Say, Shauna McGuire / Mira Grant. She writes two very different genres, and her publishers, I don't think they didn't want them right next to each other. Because her urban fantasy fans are on one hand, and her like medical science fiction fans are on the other hand. And so they didn't want to cross-pollinate that. But other people, their pen names are hidden for a variety of reasons. Or like Ursula Vernon, whose pen name is hidden, but it's mainly just so people don't come across her books in the adult section and, having bought several of her books for their kids, think, even though I'm standing in the adult science fiction section and the title of the book is The Twisted Ones, I'm going to buy this for my 10-year-old. Because there are people who will do that. But yeah, I would say you're a debut every time you come up with a new pen name. So, but be careful with that, I guess. Matt?
Yeah, I think you can absolutely use that from a marketing standpoint. I think there's nothing wrong with that. You know, when you get into, like, the rules of awards and whatnot, you need to read the language of them. But from a marketing standpoint, they'll probably want you. Like, most publishers want that kind of shit, you know? Like, that was when I sold my epic fantasy novel, that was, like, a big deal. It's like, could we call this my debut novel? You know, because I'd been published in small press before, mm-hmm. and I'd self-published some things. So the criteria gets very specific. You know, it was my debut epic fantasy novel with a big publisher. You know, so you can, if you want it to be a debut, you can find something that it's the debut of, basically. You know, but yeah, but like Mer said, there's a difference between that marketing standpoint and then like an official letter of the law. You know, awards, guidelines. Oh, Jesus Christ. Guidelines. There it is. I did it, Mer. I got there in the end.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's all. It's like most things with writing and publishing. It's what you make of it or what you want to make of it.
Yes.
And we all lie all the time anyway. We're all liars.
Totally.
That's what we do for a living.
That's what we do on this podcast. No, wait. No. Not here.
Not here. No, we tell the truth here. We tell too much of the truth here. A lot of
probably.
Time, really. But you know, that's a good thing. So I'm going through the Twitter questions. Oh yeah, I wanted to apologize, Mer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm apparently there is a Twitter user, @MrInktail, that submits a good deal of questions to Ditch Diggers, and I've apparently been mispronouncing their name.
Mm-hmm.
There is an accent in the name that I've been glossing over, and I've apparently done it more than once, and that's not cool, and I feel bad about it, so I won't apologize.
Okay.
The listener is Alistair, and I believe it's Kanye. If it's Kanye, I apologize that too. You can let me know on Twitter which one it is, and I probably should have asked beforehand. But there's an accent on the name, and I've been pronouncing it like Kane. It's K-A-N-E, but there's an accent over the E. And I've been fucking that up. And I don't want to fuck it up, because Alistair, I appreciate that you listen to the podcast and that you submit questions to it. And I'm sorry that that's been happening, and I will... If you want to clarify that for me on Twitter one more time, you've probably done it before and I dismissed it. If I apologize for that, too, if I did. But if you want to clarify it, I will not. I will endeavor to pronounce it correctly henceforth. So, not so much a question as a clarification and an apology.
Okay.
But those are also important. There's a listener that's been listening to you so long, they still thought of your daughter as a toddler and were shocked to hear that she's going to college.
Yeah.
I sympathize. I mentioned that because I sympathize with it. I cannot believe that your daughter is in college either. I feel like she was 3 years old yesterday. It's sickening how close that feels. Like, I can't even tell you, I can see it in my head. I can feel it. It's so weird. Like, where did those 10 years go, Mer?
It's the thing of other people's kids don't age. Because I have a child and she's aged and I see it. And I was talking to Tom Rockwell, Devo Spice, our theme song writer. I was talking to him and he had a, he recently, I can't remember which song it was, but he recently put out a song with kids in the background. And I'm like, oh, those are your kids. He's like, Mer, my kids are teenagers. My kids don't talk. They don't make those sounds anymore. They don't, you know, because it's like whining, yelling kids in the background. He's like, yeah, my kids don't make that sound anymore. I'm like, oh, shit, your kids grew up too, didn't they? I thought mine was the only one. So, yeah, it's not just you, man.
It's not just any of it. Yeah, that is true. You get snapshots of other mm-hmm. people's children. You get very selective snapshots. I think we answered that one already. I think we're probably not caught up, but I'm scrolling pretty far back here and I feel like we're okay on the Twitter question.
Okay. If you're listening to this and we have ignored your question for whatever reason, you're free, feel free to email or tweet at us a, update, send your question again. You're welcome to stridently say, this is the second time I've asked this, assholes, and we will get to it.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's warranted at this point, really.
Yeah.
I have no feelings left, Mer. They're all dead. This industry has killed them. This world has killed them.
Yep.
I feel nothing. It's not entirely true. I have very sensitive inner elbows, so there's that.
Okay.
So, you know, fun fact about me, if you were wondering.
Yeah. The I'm pretty numb these days myself, but I would like to explain that I have, I guess, just confusion at the fact that somewhere on the internet is a story that is the 7 of the best yoga mats for 2020. There's not even, like, so many yoga mats that there's, like, you'd think there were, like, a certain number of yoga mats where 7 could be considered the best. But no, there are enough yoga mats coming out this year that they've already found the 7 best. And I bet that doesn't mean there are 8. And I just wonder, like, the world is a weird place. There's no wondering. It's just the world's a weird place.
I mean, I really feel that's like a research failure. Because there's got to be an 8th.
Well, sure, that one's not good, though. That's my point. It's like there's so many.
I don't know that, Mer. It's just such an arbitrary place to stop. I feel like there was a reason for it that they're not telling us, Mer. I want to know about the 8th yoga mat. What about the 8th yoga mat? #8th yoga mat.
Wow, that's like...
You know what that is? That's some writer on a deadline who didn't have time to find any more yoga mats. I guarantee you that. And I don't even, it's not even an insult. That's all of us. And also at some point you just don't give a shit anymore. You're like, I need to turn this in and get paid. So it's going to be 7 yoga mats and it's whatever I've got. That's what I'm going with. And I'll just make it work.
It's going to include the yoga mat and didn't you buy me like a 5mm yoga mat once? You were really going all out with the luxury there. You were proud of the fact that it was 5mm.
I didn't know anything about yoga mats when I did that. I was just
You were thoughtful, but that was one thing you were pointing out. I think it was tongue in cheek. I'm not implying you were stupid. I'm just saying it's funny how those
those details.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the other thing. The longer I get in years here, the less I give a shit about lists anymore. Mm-hmm. I just start to see the fallacy in the whole list concept. You know, they're entertaining. They're good, like, digestible article kind of junk food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's broken down to a bullet point. But they're never going to be accurate or really useful at the end of the day. And they never give you an actual sense of anything. It's just you're reading about somebody's very narrow experience of something. I just find it. I'm having trouble getting up for lists at this point, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like they cause more trouble than the solace they provide. Especially because you work in publishing, like, all the book lists suck.
Oh, yeah.
It's always like the 10 best sci-fi books of the decade, and again, it's the same 5 old fucking white men, and it's just none of it's useful. I feel like I'd rather read something like long form and content heavy at this point than another bullet pointed list that doesn't fucking mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. So that's our show.
That is our show. Hopefully things will settle. You know, I gotta say, I've just been kind of annoyed with this year because I've not been able to get my feet under me in any sort of consistency, even though I started the year saying I'm gonna find some goddamn consistency this year. And you know, life happens. You can't control that. But even then, I would like to be able to find some consistency, and I'm still looking. So I appreciate your patience with me, both Matt and the listeners. I appreciate those of you who still continue to support the Patreon, even though we're not terribly Patreon-y right now. But we do see you. We appreciate you, and we will be putting more stuff out as soon as things settle down.
We're trying, man. We really are trying.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got. You were much more eloquent, and I second everything you said. That was smart.
Thank you.
That's it. That is everything you said was smart. I didn't mean to imply I only support the smart things you said. That's not what I meant.
Well, I hope if I say stupid shit, you're not going to support it. You're going to point it out. Well, I'd like to rely on our years of friendship that you would point it out constructively and nicely, but still.
I don't feel like our friendship would have lasted this long if you were, like, constantly saying stupid shit. If there's anything, I have less patience than I did 10 years ago. So, you must be doing okay.
Thank you.
Anyway, you should chill things, Mer. That's what should happen now.
Shilling time. Shilling time down south. It is merverse.com. That is the website. MightyMer@gmail.com is how to get in touch with me with those feedback questions. Please put Ditch Diggers in the subject line. I have another podcast. I don't like to mix up the questions. On Twitter, I'm Mighty Mer, although because of personal issues, I'm kind of gone these days, but I'm not Twitter fading. I will be back. And my most recent book is a kid's book called Minecraft: The Lost Journals. And my most recent original book is Six Wakes, still multi-award nominated and still a murder mystery in space, not a deli.
It's not a space deli, but it should be. It's my feeling.
I agree.
That's all right. One day, Mer, one day, Space Deli by Mer Lafferty and Matt Wallace. It's going to happen.
I'm on board. It'll be We can talk afterwards.
It'll be our Expanse series. Yeah. What it'll be.
What's our name? What's our pen name? What's our debut author pen name?
Our debut author pen name. Good callback to earlier in the episode.
Thank you.
I don't know. I'm looking at Twitter hashtags here. I'm just going to choose random nouns. We're going to be Tuesday Acosta. There you go.
I like it. I'm writing that one down.
And then Jim Acosta is trending. So Tuesday Acosta will be our James S.A. Corey name.
All right. I'm writing it down. You talk now.
You're writing it down?
Of course I'm writing it down. It's awesome. Here we go.
I just had to go. Much.
Tuesday Acosta.
It's a device from like a really cheesy 80s mystery movie, but why not? Where you just kind of make up a fake name by reading things.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the plot of The Usual Suspects, which like won Oscars, so I guess it's not that
cheesy. You go.
Spoiler alert. Everybody's watching it. Mean, thanks for ruining that 20-year-old movie, Matt, you asshole.
Shilling time, Matt.
Shilling time. The only thing I'm going to shill and the only thing I want everyone to do for me is go pre-order Savage Legion, my debut epic fantasy novel from Saga Press. I mean, it is my debut epic fantasy novel, so it's actually not a lie or callback. Seriously, though, this is like a really big deal for me, and I'm going to be totally honest. I feel like no one has any idea this book is coming out. I really do. I'm feeling that so hard right now. I feel like of all the books coming out this year, I have like the least amount of awareness out of any of them. So I would just love it if everybody would go to their favorite online book retailer, your local bookstore, Amazon. I don't give a shit where you order it, frankly. But just pre-order the book because it's really important. And I'm supposed to be doing a whole series based off of these, and it would help if me doing that if like people would buy this book. So Savage Legion is coming out July 21st from Saga Press. Please go pre-order it and maybe talk about it on your social media channels. That would mean a lot to me. Thank you.
All right. Well, I will see you hopefully next week. Maybe we can get this thing, this chugging train back on the tracks and moving along and going choo-choo and all that.
And go shill down south.
And go shill down south. That's right. Oh, boy. I hope.
Like a musical about like a Texas cat house. You know? Chilling down south. That was me singing, which I'm never going to do again. But yeah, we're going to try. Just nobody get sick. That'll help us out. Everybody stay healthy for like a week, and we can get this done. That would really be helpful to us personally. But yeah, Mer, I will see you next week. I won't see you, but like I'll hear you.
Yeah. All right. All right. Thanks a lot, Matt. You can support us at patreon.com/mightymer.
Ditch Diggers!
Theme song by Devo Spice. DevoSpice.com.